Hello, and welcome to our Food is Medicine podcast, brought to you by patrickholford.com.
My name is Patrick Holford, and I'm a nutritional therapist. I've been in this field for 30 years. And I've written a book called Say No to Cancer. And I want to share with you a slightly radical but very common, sensible approach for understanding why it is we are not winning the cancer war, we're losing it. The incidence is going up and up. And what are the simple things that you can do that really make a big difference, not only to reduce your risk, but also what can you do if you're actually fighting cancer now? Naturally. When I first wrote about cancer back in the 90s, the risk was around 1 in 10. And I predicted, simply on the basis of trends, that by 2011, our lifetime risk would be 1 in 4. It's actually 1 in 3, and it's creeping towards 1 in 2. Yeah, I mean, that's right. What I'm saying is that literally out of three people, one person currently will have a diagnosis of cancer in their life. And this really isn't right. It's not how we are designed to be. And the question is, what can you do about it? I was reading a very good report by the World Cancer Research Fund, which said that you can cut your risk by 40% by changing your diet. And another by the Cancer Research Campaign that said 3 out of 4 cancers are preventable. But is anyone listening? Now, of course, this is a scary subject. And often we hear and encouraged by the fact that survival rates are up. And that is true. But often these survival rates are reported as 5-year survival, which has gone up from 70% to just over 80%. But quite a lot of this is because cancers are diagnosed earlier. And what you really want to do is look at the actual survival after 10 or 15 years. Now, one of the absolute startlingly obvious facts is there are many countries that have an incredibly low risk of cancer. One of these is Thailand. So generally, the Asian countries, particularly rural China, Japan, and especially Thailand, has an absolute fraction of the risk of cancer that we do in the West, and particularly the hormonal cancers like breast cancer and prostate cancer. Is it genetic? Is there something about Thai people that makes them immune to cancer? And the answer appears to be no, because Chinese or Thai or Asian people living in the West, consuming a largely Western diet and lifestyle, soon end up with a very, very similar risk. So there's only two logical answers, and that is there's something they're doing that we are not, or something they're not doing that we are. And I want to address these. Now, the conventional way of treating cancer is either surgery, where you remove the tumor, radiation, where effectively you burn it, or some sort of chemotherapy, which means a drug that is toxic to the cancer cell. And to a large extent, if your immune system is weak and you now have a large tumor mass, the idea that you can so strengthen your immune system by eating more bean sprouts or whatever to enable your entire immune system to gobble up and process a tumor mass, I find that a little bit hard to believe. So if a cancer is operable, it makes sense to me to remove the cancer mass. But, as Einstein said, the significant problems we have created cannot be solved at the same level of thinking we were at when we created them. So if you keep living the same lifestyle and the same diet, then what's to stop cancer cells forming again? The process of chemotherapy, which for many of us, you know, seems like something really important that must be done, I mean, both the social and political and emotional pressure is tremendously strong to go down that route. The stark fact is if you look at the studies on chemotherapy, I'm reading one here, it says the contribution of chemotherapy to 5-year survival in adults was 2.3% in Australia and 2.1% in the USA. So it makes a difference, but it's not a very big difference. I believe the major problem is we're not looking at cancer as a systemic problem. It's not caused by one thing, but by a process. And I want to talk about 4 key parts of the cancer equation. The first is what initiates a normal healthy cell to start to misbehave and become a cancer cell. And we're going to learn about how DNA, literally the instructions for the cell, gets changed. And the second part of the process is why we lose the ability to repair damaged DNA. And the third part of the process we can call promotional promoters. Because once you do have cancer cells, there are certain substances, hormones, for example, which can cause cancer cells to proliferate. They may not cause cancer cells to form, but they do promote the growth of cancer cells. And the fourth is a weakened immune system, because normally the immune system is designed to take out any cell that behaves badly. So starting at the first part of the process, that is what causes cancer. In my book, I write a lot about common carcinogens and things you've heard of, for example, smoking and pollution, pesticides and herbicides, and there are all sorts of carcinogens in foods. For example, a lot of crispy foods that are made crispy at very high temperature contain something called acrylamides, and there's more and more evidence that these are quite carcinogenic. And then, of course, radiation. That's another known carcinogen. And then there are some very controversial areas that I also talk about in the book, that is non-ionizing radiation, for example, from the use of mobile phones. So in some cases, we have clear evidence of cancer-causing chemicals. And in other cases, we're not quite sure. But anyway, there are ways to create a lifestyle that minimizes your exposure to carcinogens. The next part of the process is about DNA damage. And you can think of your DNA like a lot of rooms in a castle. When it's time to rebuild a cell, your body has this incredible ability to pick up just the instructions, for example, from room 35 to 38 and 106 to 117, to create that new cell. So we are continually rebuilding, replacing, rejuvenating our cells from information contained within our DNA. And that DNA gets damaged. So we have to have the ability to repair it. And the main process for repairing DNA is called methylation. For example, Dr. Adrian Bird from Edinburgh University says 1 in 4 gene mutations, that is gene changes, that cause human disease can be attributed to methyl groups on our genes. And these methyl groups, or methylation, depend very, very much on B vitamins. There's actually a measure in the blood called homocysteine. Homocysteine, you can literally get it measured by your doctor. In some countries, you can get a home test kit that measures it. And if you have a raised homocysteine level, then you also have a raised risk of death from cancer. And the reason why homocysteine is high is because you don't have enough vitamin B6, B12, and folic acid. So one thing I always do is to measure a person's homocysteine. And interestingly, when other tumor markers go up, homocysteine goes up. And when other tumor markers go down, homocysteine goes down. So there's quite a lot of research which suggests that homocysteine can literally predict how you are doing. And ideally, you want your level to be coming down. Now, I do recommend testing homocysteine, not just taking very high dose B6, B12, and folic acid, because we don't all need very high doses. And although this is a little controversial, especially coming from a nutritionist, the essential nutrient folic acid is known to stop healthy cells becoming precancerous cells. But there's some fairly good evidence that if you flood the system with lots of folic acid and you do already have precancerous cells, for example, colorectal polyps, then it's possible that the folic acid may stimulate those precancerous cells to grow into fully fledged cancer cells. So I'm not a fan of giving everyone lots of folic acid. And in fact, in countries like America and Canada, where folic acid has been added into flour for the laudable reason of preventing neural tube defects, spina bifida, while the incidence of neural tube defects has gone down, the incidence of colorectal cancer has gone up. So B vitamins are great if you need them. And the trick is to measure your homocysteine level. If it's high, you're not getting enough. And if it's low, then what you're doing right now is fine. The third part of the cancer process is promotion. You have genes called oncogenes that encourage the growth of cancer cells, and also genes called tumor suppressor genes that suppress cancer cell growth. Obviously, you want these genes to be switched on. There are certain hormones and factors in our diet and lifestyle that can encourage the growth of cancer cells. In the early days of HRT, when women were given estrogen, lots of estrogen, what happened is it increased cancer rate. Whether or not estrogen can cause a cell to become cancerous is not really clear, but it is clear that if you have breast cancer cells and you consume a lot more estrogen, it encourages those cells to grow. And most people with breast cancer, they will be diagnosed as having estrogen-positive cells, cancer cells. So they're literally stimulated by estrogen. And that led to HRT then containing progestins, not natural progesterone, but synthetic progesterone-like hormones. And these reduced the incidence of womb cancer. But it's a very controversial area because there's quite a few studies now that show that the synthetic progestins plus estrogen do quite dramatically increase risk of breast cancer and possibly also ovarian cancer. Now, one of the substances I've got very interested in, and this is partly because there is such a big increase in hormonal cancers, is milk. And I'll tell you why. I mean, just to put this into context, the Cambridge University Cancer Surveillance Unit developed a model for predicting rate of cancer. In 1985, 8.6% of women had breast cancer or risk of breast cancer. And their model predicts by 2015 that will be 13%. So that's a 52% increase. And in relation to prostate cancer, the numbers are even worse, going from 7.1% in 85 up to 23.7%. That's a 234% increase. So why are we getting these very big increases in hormone-related cancers? Some of the chemicals that act like or disrupt the normal growth signals in the body include certain pesticides, certain compounds used in plastics, many of which are now being removed, various industrial compounds such as PCBs, now largely unused, and dioxins, but so non-biodegradable that they accumulate, HRT. But then there is insulin-like growth factor, or IGF, in milk. Let me talk about this. When you have too much sugar in your blood, your body produces more insulin. And if you really have a sugar problem, you move towards diabetes, and then you have a lot more insulin and a lot more glucose in the blood. And insulin is also a growth promoter. It makes cancer cells grow. So there's a very strong link, for example, between diabetes and cancer risk. Now, milk contains a hormone called insulin-like growth factor, or IGF-1. And when you drink milk, you not only get a little bit of this, but it in fact encourages your body to produce this very, very strong growth factor. And what it does is, number one, it encourages cells to grow. And number two, it stops cells from committing suicide. It's called apoptosis. Normally, a cancer cell will commit suicide. That's what it does. So why would milk do this? And the answer is very simple. Just look at evolution. What's milk designed for? It's meant to make babies grow very fast, very quickly. And the last thing you want when a young baby's cells are multiplying and growing at an extraordinary rate is those cells, you know, committing suicide. The point is that we aren't actually designed to consume milk as an adult. So if I told you I'm in my 50s and I'm still breastfeeding from another species of animal, you'd think I'm weird, but I'm talking about dairy consumption. And coming back to the Chinese and the Thai, who have such a low rate of these cancers, what is it they do that we don't do? Well, they eat lots of beans. They eat lentils. They eat foods that are not part of a traditional Western diet. And what don't they do? And the answer is they don't drink milk. They consider dairy products to be a very strange thing to consume. It's literally not part of evolution. So there's a very, very good chance that if you are consuming a lot of dairy products or a lot of sugar, and that means you have more insulin, that you are going to encourage the growth of cancer cells if you have them. Also, if you're very stressed, you produce more cortisol. This is another growth hormone. Also, as you start to gain weight, excess body fat produces more estrogen, and that's another growth promoter. And if you don't eat beans, then you're not getting phytoestrogens. There's a lot of confusion here, by the way. People think that must be bad, a plant estrogen, a phytoestrogen. But actually, these plant estrogens block the receptors for estrogen, and they have an effect of lowering the load. So it's actually the bean eaters that have a lower rate of cancer. Beans, nuts, seeds, lentils. And then another factor is a lack of estrogen detoxifiers. The more greens you eat, the more it detoxifies estrogen. The liver actually breaks down excess estrogen, and particularly the cruciferous vegetables. And this means foods whose leaves grow across, like kale, cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts. These foods contain nutrients that help to break down estrogen. Now, I really do think that one of the major processes that's leading to this very big increase in cancer is this shift in our metabolism connected with too many carbohydrates, blood sugar problems, too much insulin, weight gain, sugar cravings. And all of this is part of a syndrome called metabolic syndrome. It's linked to polycystic ovaries, it's linked to diabetes, it's linked to breast cancer, to underactive thyroid, to low mood, to weight gain, to high cholesterol. So many of the new 21st century diseases. And if a postmenopausal woman has a high insulin level, they literally double their risk of breast cancer. To put it into context, smoking accounts for 30% of cancer risk in women, while being obese, significantly overweight, accounts for 20%. The solution, as I share in another podcast, to losing weight, is to eat what's called a low glycemic load diet, with less carbs, more protein, and the right kind of low glycemic load carbohydrates. And eating in this way is linked to much lower rates of breast cancer, colorectal cancer, ovarian cancer, endometrial cancers, while high GL is linked to so many cancers. So getting your blood sugar under control is absolutely critical. According to one study of 5,000 Italian women in the Annals of Oncology in 2005, the researchers conclude that the excess risk for frequent sweet consumption may account for 12% of breast cancer cases. So sugar is a very important factor, and eating a low GL diet is really critical. So what we've learned already is one way to reduce your risk of cancer is avoid carcinogens as much as you can. Ideally lose weight, avoid lots of sugar, eat a low GL diet, reduce your stress levels, don't live on stimulants, eat more antioxidant-rich fruit and vegetables, and choose organic, because by eating organic, you're actually avoiding any potential carcinogens. minimize your intake of dairy products, avoid HRT, although in some cases the use of bioidentical hormones, if you are deficient, I don't have a problem with that. Eat more cruciferous vegetables, and certain foods like broccoli, watercress, and other greens are known to have specific anti-cancer properties. For example, broccoli contains something called DIM, or indole-3-carbinol, that's very interesting in the way that it helps the liver to work. Eat more beans, lentils, nuts, and seeds. This could, for example, be tofu or chickpeas, high in phytoestrogens. These protect your cells from harmful estrogens and also increase your intake of omega-3. Omega-3 is an anti-inflammatory nutrient that's found in oily fish and nuts and seeds. And there's lots of studies now that show that if you increase omega-3, more fish, more nuts, more seeds, less meat, less milk, you reduce your risk of cancer. So those are some of the top tips. In terms of supplements, I'm a great fan of having a lot of vitamin C, a lot of zinc, antioxidants. However, what is promising if you've got cancer? I want to mention briefly three interesting, promising new approaches. And the first is very high dose vitamin C. When you flood your system with vitamin C, for example, by taking a gram an hour or as much as you can take up to bowel tolerance, that's the point where you start to get loose bowels, it makes it very, very hard for cancer cells to survive. Some doctors are reporting amazing results by using intravenous vitamin C therapy, which is often given two or three times a week over a number of weeks, once again to flood the system and really have a very, very high level of vitamin C. Recently, there have been some fascinating studies on this, animal studies, not human studies yet, sadly, which have found that if you do get blood levels of vitamin C high enough, you can massively reduce tumor mass. So that's the name of the game in relation to vitamin C, which is to really have a very, very high intake for a period of probably at least 1, 2, 3 months. The first person to discover this was Dr. Linus Pauling, working with an oncologist called Ewan Cameron. And back in the 70s, he published the results of an extraordinary study that gave terminal cancer patients, there was no treatment available, intravenous and oral vitamin C, 10 grams orally plus injections, intravenous vitamin C, and compared them to patients who weren't given this treatment. And the patients treated with vitamin C survived approximately four times longer than the controls. And on follow-up, over 22% of vitamin C-treated patients, compared to only 0.4% of controls, survived for more than 1 year. So I think there's real merit in high-dose vitamin C as a natural chemotherapy, because what it does is it makes it impossible for cancer cells to survive and the tumor mass shrinks, while it has no harmful effect at all on healthy cells. In the same vein, there's very interesting substances found in foods called salvestrols. Basically, what happens is that cancer cells express an enzyme called CYP1B1, which is not present in normal cells. And it just so happens that certain compounds present in food, if fed to cancer cells. Now, it happens that there are certain compounds in foods called salvestrols. And when cancer cells are fed salvestrols, this enzyme called CYP1B1, spelled CYP1B1, which is only in cancer cells, converts the salvestrols into compounds that kill the cancer cells. But in healthy cells, this doesn't happen. One example of a salvestrol effect is resveratrol, which is very, very rich in red grapes. So that has a salvestrol effect. But there are many natural foods that contain salvestrols, which appear to selectively kill off cancer cells. Now, once again, there are very good studies on this in relation to what literally happens to cancer cells. And there are also published case histories of people who are supplemented concentrates, high doses of salvestrols. But we don't yet have clinical studies. So you could say, let's wait and see. But on the other hand, here is an approach that makes total sense. It's non-toxic to healthy cells, toxic to cancer cells. And from my point of view, it's well worth trying. The other approach I would urge you to look into, although it's not actually nutritional as such, is called photodynamic therapy. And this relates to certain drugs called photosensitizers that are only activated by light. So when someone has a tumor mass where it would be possible to pass a fiber optic cable into the tumor mass, the patient is given the drug. This is a type of chemotherapy. The drug, however, rapidly leaves healthy cells. So after a period of a certain number of hours, the treatment begins. The drug is largely left only in the cancer cells. The light is turned on through this fiber optic cable. It activates the drug, and you have a very, very localized chemotherapy for cancer cells. Have a look at the website, killingcancer.co.uk. And what I like about this is people report a fraction of the side effects. And this is recommended by NICE, that's the National Institute of Clinical Excellence. So this is a medical procedure that should be being much more adopted. So simple actions you can do to cut your risk of cancer. Up your intake of antioxidants, both through diet and supplements. Have more fruit, more veg, more herbs, more spices, more foods with strong colors. Up your intake of specific anti-cancer foods. Have more omega-3 fish, less meat. Choose organic. Check your homocysteine level. And if it is high, then you need more B vitamins. You might want to check your estrogen progesterone balance if you're working with a practitioner who can do that. Also eat more phytoestrogens, and these are present in nuts, seeds, and beans. Eat more cruciferous vegetables, particularly broccoli, which is very high in DIM, which helps to break down excess estrogens. And avoid or greatly limit your intake of dairy products, sugar, burnt meat, fried food, and alcohol. Now, these are a few simple tips, but if you want more details and the evidence and studies behind some of the suggestions that I'm giving you, then my book, Say No to Cancer, tells you the full story. I hope you found this helpful, and I wish you the very best of health.
Thank you for listening to our Food is Medicine podcast. To find out more about reducing your risk of cancer, we suggest you read Say No to Cancer, which is on special offer exclusively to our podcast listeners. Simply go to www.patrickholford.com/cancerbook to receive a 20% discount. To find out more about health and nutrition, please visit us at patrickholford.com. As well as access to a library of updated information, you can join our online club, be supported with our online programme, find out more about our regular events, and purchase books and products to help you become and stay healthy. To make sure you don't miss out on new podcasts, subscribe to the Food is Medicine podcast feed. If you have any feedback on the show, please email us at podcast@patrickholford.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Search for Patrick Holford.